Hello, and welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. I'm your host, Daniel Angrenon. On today's show, we have the world's most recognized vegan bodybuilder, Robert Cheek. But first, before we get to that interview, I just have a quick announcement. For our Toronto listeners, check out the Toronto Raw Vegan Festival on Saturday, June 8th at 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Sunday, June 9th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 918 Bathurst Street, north of Bloor Street in Toronto, Ontario. You'll have free admission. They're going to have guest speakers, food demos, lots of different booths, vendors, lots of awesome stuff. So please check it out. But now on to our interview. On today's show, we have Robert Cheek, who is considered the world's most recognized vegan bodybuilder. He is the president of Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness. He has written books, including the titled Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness. He's even been in films such as Vegan Fitness Built Naturally and Vegan Brothers in Iron. His book, Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness, is a comprehensive guide that is for vegans who want to build muscle, bodybuilders who want to try veganism, or anybody in between who wants a healthier lifestyle. I'm very excited to interview him. Personally, I've started a bit of a fitness journey myself, and his book has definitely been quite the asset to me. So welcome to the show, Robert.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate you having me.
No problem. So just to get started, I was wondering if you could tell our listeners about how you got into bodybuilding, veganism, and how those two passions came together.
Well, kind of a roundabout way, really. I got into this lifestyle, maybe the same way some people come to it and quite differently from others. I grew up on a farm, and I was in the 4-H program. I raised animals for food production. I would sell animals at the auction. I was a young kid and didn't really know what was going on, where the animals were going. I got pretty close to them, like one might get with a dog or a cat, say, first name basis, spending a lot of time with them. And all I knew is that when I took them to the auction, I got money for that, and that was pretty cool as a young kid. And it didn't really click with me, or it didn't resonate with me what was going on until my older sister, Tanya, she is two years older, and she recognized where these animals were, these chickens, rabbits, dairy cows, where they were going after we sold them at the auction. And one year she actually bought chickens to bring them back home. And I thought that was pretty interesting and pretty inspiring to take that stand as a young kid, especially as a kid that didn't have a lot of money, but decided to use her money to bring some chickens back home so they wouldn't be turned into food. And that was all well and good, but it still didn't change my diet, really. It didn't change my viewpoint on the whole issue at large. And that wasn't until 1995, when my older sister Tanya was organizing something called the Animal Rights Week at our high school. And I was one of these guys. I was a 5-sport athlete. I went to a sandwich shop, kind of like a Subway, but a locally owned one, and had turkey sandwiches, ham sandwiches, these kind of things pretty much every day. Occasionally I would go to fast food burger type places. But I told my friends, just to support my sister for this week, starting December 8th, 95, I'm going to do this vegetarian thing. I had no idea I would stick with it. But when I went to this event that my sister organized, she had speakers, videos of animal testing and factory farming, literature, discussion groups. And that event turned into the next 18 years of being vegan. I became vegan right away. I became quite passionate about it, as many of us do when we first become vegan. Very outspoken, started writing about it in high school projects. 2 years later, I organized the Animal Rights Week for our school and brought in speakers and interviewed people and led the discussions and things of that nature. And that's what really started my journey into the vegan lifestyle and into the animal rights movement, and then later into the health and wellness movement and things like that. But this entire time, I was a pretty small kid. You know, you read my book. I was a skinny, scrawny kid, 89 pounds when I was in eighth grade, barely 100 pounds by the time I entered high school the next year. And I really wasn't sure how this was going to work for me, because throughout my life growing up, what I wanted to be was the opposite of what I was. I think it's very common for a lot of us. We want something we don't have. I was a little kid. I wanted to be bigger and stronger. I saw all the commercials, milk does the body good, and I watched these guys change their physique and from skinny to pretty strong and built. And that's what I wanted. I grew up watching pro wrestling and things like that. And I thought that would be pretty interesting to live that kind of lifestyle as a muscular person. And so I questioned whether I could do it. I mean, I really seriously questioned it. I asked my sister, I asked other people, I said, can one really do this? Can you reject all animal products, not just meat, but all animal products, and still build muscle? And I guess I had to find out for myself. So that's what I did. And I, sure enough, I gained about 75 pounds over the next 5 or 6 years and went from a kind of a skinny high school athlete to a champion vegan bodybuilder. And then later on wrote a book about it.
Wow. So what has been the response from the bodybuilding community to yourself and other vegans? Has it been generally positive? Has the number of vegan bodybuilders grown?
You know, I really didn't know what to expect. I thought I would probably be met with some apprehension, maybe a little bit of rejection. I knew there'd be some support for sure. But it's been mixed, but definitely more positive than negative. And really, we're on our 11th year now with veganbodybuilding.com. We started back in 2002. And back then, it was really a blog before blogs existed, or at least before they had that name. It was just me writing about what I was doing, what I was lifting, what I was eating. I would attend these various shows, bodybuilding competitions, and wear my vegan bodybuilding t-shirts around. But it was mostly just me blogging about it. And then as we created a forum on our website before Facebook came along, kind of like back during the MySpace days, all of a sudden, I connected with all of these people who were vegan and athletic and interested in weightlifting and athletics in general. Many of them came over to our website forum, and we had this very, very active community with thousands of vegan athlete members before we knew it. And it really started to pick up steam quickly, and of course now it's bigger than ever, and there's so many different vegan athlete groups and websites and organizations and competitions and businesses. There's so many things, mainstream athletes, a whole bunch of people embracing it, writing books, making films about it. I mean, it's the growth over the last decade has been incredible.
Yeah, and I think one of the really cool things was that I noticed that you sort of make sure that you do tackle this question about reconciling veganism with bodybuilding. And the one chapter that springs to mind, of course, is the one where you talk about the dreaded protein question. So, like, I wanted to talk about how, you know, I think as a bodybuilder, you really have legitimated the whole protein question, because if someone like you is getting enough protein, then obviously the vegan diet can work. So I was wondering, sort of in relation to that, how important do you think physical appearance is to successful vegan and animal rights activism, and why? You know, say someone like you shows off your muscles, how does that relate to being a good animal rights activist?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and there's a lot of components to that question, because in my book I talk about the importance of leading by example and representing whatever you want to represent in a very positive way, and, you know, doing something that a lot of people don't think can be done and showing how to do it, creating kind of a model or a how-to, all these types of things. And I think those can be very, very powerful. I mean, obviously we've seen that through veganbodybuilding.com. 10 years ago, I was just following my own passion and adding a bunch of muscle, gaining 75 pounds, and that really sparked interest and did inspire a community. And it's been really interesting to watch that feedback and that reaction over the last 10 years. And many other people have done the same. And in fact, have had greater transformations and have been able to tell their story and make sure a lot of people get inspired by it, are aware of it. Non-vegan people become aware of it and all of a sudden look at veganism in a whole new light. There's all these different things, but I'm also quick to recognize that I don't think we need to judge appearance and come to conclusions, giving it a whole lot of merit. I mean, we all have different backgrounds. We all have different genetics. We all have different desires and things that we're trying to achieve. And it's not building muscle for everybody. I mean, some people it's endurance running. Some people it's art. Some people it's theater. Some people it's music. I don't think that just judging someone by their physique based on being vegan or not is a really helpful thing. Same thing with categorizing everyone who is obese or overweight into one category as in, oh, they must be non-vegan person. If they were vegan, maybe everything in their life would change. So I don't know if that's really helpful to really generalize and categorize people. But what I think is helpful is to, like you said, show that, because that is the question that we can't get enough protein, and how are we going to build muscle? How can we sustain muscle, prevent injury, all these different things. But to just show that. You don't have to preach about it or talk about it too much or flaunt it or anything like that. But day in and day out, within your community, in your family, in your life, in your gym, lead by positive example. I think it does speak volumes, and it does have a big impact. And clearly, we see that when people say, hey, wow, I never knew that I could. I never knew that I could be strong and eat only plants and not contribute to animal suffering, but now I know that I can. And that's what I think is our end game. That's what we're trying to get to.
Yeah, totally. And I think, especially in relation to this plant versus animal-based protein debate, I think we're seeing more and more ways in which, you know, animal-based proteins are hazardous to your health, but other ways where, you know, a lot of bodybuilders will use these animal-based proteins because perhaps, and you can probably correct me if I'm wrong, it's easier to build muscle, but are there ways in which plant proteins might be better besides the obviously that they're cruelty-free?
Yeah, actually, I think across the board they're better, and for a lot of reasons. And I just finished, for people listening, this is a great course online. I finished with the T. Colin Campbell plant-based nutrition certification course through Cornell University sometime last spring, actually about a year ago. I finished that course, and it was really great. It was eye-opening. I was familiar with a lot of the information, but there was a lot of detailed statistics and reports and studies and facts that were really compelling. And I think what we're looking at is all protein can contribute to different things. So it can contribute to muscle recovery and muscle strength and repairing damaged muscle tissue and things like that, especially after exercise. That's one of protein's major functions. But if we're getting the wrong type of protein, we're getting acid-forming protein, and we're getting something that may grow cancer cells, grow tumor cells, insulin growth factor 1, growing these cancer cells may not be the best thing. Surely that type of protein, whey, casein, etc., can build muscle. That's what it's designed to do in a baby calf. But maybe that's not the end result we're looking for, just to build muscle from a substance that may not be healthful in a lot of other areas. And so if you look at the primary sources of nutrition, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fatty acids, etc., these all come in their original forms from plants. That's where all these amino acids originate. That's where antioxidants originate. They're only in plants, not in animal foods. Fiber is only in plants, not in animal foods. So when you eat plant-based protein, and there's protein in essentially everything. There's just smaller amounts in fruits and larger amounts in greens and grains and beans and nuts and seeds. Those all have pretty substantial amounts, maybe a little bit smaller in vegetables and fruits, but the fact is there's protein everywhere, easy to find, and with it, it comes with vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, fiber, water, all of these things that are really, really important. It's not isolated, it's not acid-forming, it doesn't contribute to cancer growth and tumor growth and all these other things, cholesterol and everything else, saturated fat perhaps, super high concentrated calories, and so when we opt for plant-based whole foods, it's almost impossible not to get enough protein just because of the macronutrient breakdown of food. The amount of calories that come from proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, it'd be quite an effort to eat a diet where you would not get enough protein, assuming you had adequate calories, just because of the way calories are broken down into components. So really, even though I came up with a bunch of somewhat silly, somewhat witty, somewhat helpful responses to the protein question in the book, it's really not that big of a question. It's not that big of a concern. And so I'm actually hoping that people start to move away from that question, away from that fear, where they can come to the realization that protein is easy to get on any diet. It's actually not that big of a deal. Everybody gets enough. The only people who don't get enough are starving or malnourished. And getting too much, especially from animal foods, can be very problematic, especially for the kidneys who have to deal with it. So I'm hoping we move away from that question and understand that diversity of plant-based whole food nutrition is a holistic approach to health. And you can still build muscle, you can still have great endurance, you can still have low body fat and be very, very fit. And I think that's what we're all really trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of wondering, while we're on the topic of health and nutrition, you know, I've heard various debates or whatever about how focusing on health, the health aspect of veganism, in terms of activism, can sometimes take away the message of animal rights for veganism. For example, if someone says they're vegan because of their health and not because of the animals, then if, say, their health starts to decay, they might be more likely to give up or something. Do you think that this is a valid debate, or what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. It's an interesting question, and I really have a couple of different reactions to it, because I see all the different perspectives, and I think that's important. I think that the best way to understand someone is to see things from their perspective the best way possible, at least make your greatest attempt to do that. And you know what? To answer the question directly right up front, I think one of the best quotes that I've come across in recent history, the last few years, is from my friend who I was working with. He was being criticized for promoting the health aspect a little bit by some of the community at large, I guess. And he said, animals don't care why you stop eating them. They just care that you stop. And if millions and millions and millions of people are quitting eating animals because of various health books or health messages or health films or whatever, I think that's a great thing. I think that's an absolutely great thing. Of course, at the end of the day, we would love for everyone to really get the message, to really care, to really be compassionate, to make decisions based on these animal rights reasons, these important life-changing reasons of not contributing to suffering and giving everyone a fair chance at life and not causing cruelty and all these types of things. Of course, we would love that. But at the end of the day, if we're trying to get a shift in people's behavior, including eating habits and lifestyle habits, sometimes we have to speak to people in the language that they're familiar with. And like it or not, really, I think as humans, we're really focused on ourselves. We're focused on our own image, our reputation, our names. If people are looking at us a certain way, we feel bad if someone's pointing at us and laughing. We feel embarrassed. We feel all of these things centered around ourselves. At the end of the day, we would love for everyone to get the message and for everyone to get on board for compassionate reasons, to care about animals' lives, to see things from a holistic perspective, to care about the planet beyond just ourselves. But we also need to understand the way that people carry themselves and sometimes put their own personal interests first. I mean, we all put our interests in activities, relationships, education, athletics. We're really focused on ourselves in this society. I mean, look at Facebook and Twitter. All we do is look at our status updates all day long and post pictures of ourselves and wait for feedback. I mean, this is kind of the society we live in. And so if we can speak to people on their level, as silly as it sounds, to have to go to that level to get people to care, I think if we can let people know they can live a healthier, happier life by changing their behavior, by rejecting animal products and by adopting a plant-based diet, I think that can be really, really effective. People tend to care about their own health, their own appearance, and all these different things that a plant-based diet tends to be able to help, preventing diseases, reversing diseases, reducing body fat, reducing body weight, etc. So I think the health message is very, very valid, and I think the animal rights message is very, very valid, and I think hopefully we can come together and be an effective voice collectively and just resonate with different audiences, people who connect with the animal rights message, like myself as a 15-year-old kid, or people who oftentimes are in the audience when I'm giving talks about plant-based nutrition and exercise, who want to unclog their arteries and have more energy and reduce body fat and live longer. So I think both methods are really effective. And I think anytime any type of movement gets too divisive, we run into some problems. We lose power, we lose strength. So I'm hoping everyone can come together and we'll share our own different visions and agendas, and hopefully it resonates and connects with as many people as possible.
Definitely, completely agree with you there. So why would you suggest that perhaps a vegan or a person who maybe doesn't have the healthiest diet, maybe doesn't work out very much, why should they perhaps get your book, or if not get your book, you know, get started working out and getting interest in stuff like bodybuilding or just fitness in general?
Well, like I said earlier, we all have the ability to influence people in a positive or negative way. And I'm sure we've all had this kind of moment where we recognize, at least any of us who have been vegan for a long time, especially through the 90s, where you're kind of at work or you're sitting in the corner, you're eating your cold tofu hot dogs or bagels and tofu cream cheese or whatever. People are just like, what's going on? Maybe they're turned off by some of the junk foods or the fact that, oh, just because it's vegan, now I'll go eat as many pizza and donuts and soda, whatever as possible. They may be slightly turned off by that. I think we still have the opportunity around every corner to lead by positive example and make some of the healthiest decisions possible. And that's, and vegan or not, I mean, there's a lot of junk food out there. There's a lot of junk food that's vegan out there, and this can have adverse effects on our health, which then inhibits our ability to spread our message as far and as wide as possible. It can affect our longevity. It can affect our energy levels, which then leads to our ambition and willpower to keep after it every day after day to share this message and to create change and create a cultural shift. So I think it's really for anyone, whether it's a book like mine or Brendan's book or Rip Esselstyn's book or someone's book that encourages people to eat more plants, eat exclusively plants, and exercise often. I think that's a powerful message that everyone can benefit from, because everybody wants to be healthier. Everybody wants to be happier. Everybody wants more energy. There are systems to achieve this. There are ways of eating to achieve this. There's ways of identifying what exercise is and what exercises that you're individually passionate about, things that you like, which then will help keep you more consistent and help you get closer to attaining goals. And these are helpful resources. So I hope people do visit our website or drop by and say hi sometime or read one of these books and resources, and we can continue to ascend to this cultural shift where we'll see a majority of people on a plant-based diet sometime in the future.
Fantastic. Now, I really like how the book is set up. It's in these sort of easily digestible chunks. You've got lots of diagrams and lists, recaps, etc. So I was wondering, what was your decision into the style of the book, as well as, you know, there's a wide variety of topics. So what were your decisions on what to include, what to not include? Because I'm sure there's much more that you'd like to be talking about and etc.
Yeah, it's writing a book is a really challenging process, really. That's the word that comes to mind. It's fun and it's exciting and it's exhilarating. It's rewarding, but it's challenging. And so at the very beginning of the show, you mentioned some of the other books that I've written. I started writing personal development or motivational type books. That was my real interest. I shouldn't say real interest, but I mean, as far as a writer, that was my interest. I've been vegan almost 20 years now, but it was motivating people and getting people excited about life, about pursuing their passion, about health and fitness and compassionate living and all that stuff I was really pumped up about. So I wrote a couple motivational books and pitched them around to different publishers and things like that. And they didn't really work out the way that I had hoped. I got an agent in New York, but we didn't get very far with it. And so I sat down with Brendan Brazier, a good friend of mine, and said, why don't you just write a book about vegan bodybuilding? That's what your background is. That's what your experience is. That's what you're known for. You've been doing it for 10 years. And I said, well, I tried it, but I also didn't get very far with that book. I tried it back in, I think, 2004 or 2005, writing a book about vegan bodybuilding. And anyway, I finally took Brendan's advice to just sit down and make it happen. And so I sat down and I wrote hundreds of pages within a very short period. And I worked on all those different things you mentioned, the type of layout, the style, what to include. I had an editor help me narrow down the topics, and we cut out a whole bunch of chapters. And then I had to rewrite a bunch of it. All told, I wrote something like 750 pages. Of course, only 317 went to print. The other hundreds were rewrites and stuff that we scrapped and decided wasn't really good enough. And so what I really wanted to do was to fulfill the role of the subtitle of the book, mm-hmm. The Complete Guide to Building Your Body on a Plant-Based Diet. So how do you start? Why vegan? Beginning bodybuilding, meal programs, exercise programs, the best exercises to yield the best results, get the best return on investment. And then if you want to take it further, you know, how to market yourself to create a lifestyle in this area, to get sponsored by companies, to take your message on the road, to write your own books, make your own films, build your own website, share this message, and help a lot of other people and make a significant impact. I also listed, as you mentioned, lots of exercises and foods and lists, and answered the protein question. And I even highlighted, I don't know, maybe a couple dozen restaurants throughout the country. So when you're traveling to these major cities, you have places that have already been reviewed. I've been to them. I've talked about them, recommended some dishes there, and photos throughout the book of transformation. I think that's one of the things that speaks the loudest when you're talking about fitness. I mean, really, that's what put a lot of these athletes on the map, is this before and after. I mean, usually it's people losing a bunch of weight. You hear about people losing 100 pounds, losing 200 pounds, the TV show The Biggest Loser, all these things are like, wow, what an accomplishment. And it is. And that's what really inspires people to want to make those changes. I kind of went the opposite way. I was always a really skinny kid, which I honestly think, without making too much of a judgment, but I think a lot of people in the vegan animal rights movement can resonate with that. I mean, they're wanting to get bigger and stronger. And so I had done that, and so I used those images throughout the book. I tried to tell a story through the imagery of, I even showed some photos of me showing animals in 4-H as a little kid. And then obviously the juxtaposition of then becoming vegan and a strong bodybuilder carrying that torch and spreading that message very far from where I started. And also had the before and after skinny kid with a dream of becoming a strength athlete someday, and then achieving that. And then I put in other little things to help tell that story, because it's a motivational story. It was a personal story too. So I showed a photo of me and Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example, together, and other people, because that was part of my motivation, was to make a career out of it, so then I could spend my life without doing 9-to-5, working for somebody else or for a company I didn't believe in or whatever. I could spend that time, 1,440 minutes a day, 24 hours a day, promoting the lifestyle that I care deeply about. And so there's a lot of personal stories throughout the book. And it because it was my first book that came to print, the motivational books actually didn't make it to print yet, though they're still being worked on. My first book really introduced me as an author to the audience. And that really help dictate the material. I wanted people to get my background so they'd know where I'm coming from, that I wasn't somebody who was a 200-pound athlete who got into veganism a year ago and maintained muscle. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that, but mine was telling a story about building your body on a plant-based diet and what that means, what types of food that includes, what types of exercises, what type of motivation to keep going day after day when things get tough and when you get setbacks, when you get discouraged. So that's really where it came from. And then I just tried to make it fun with some pyramids at the back of the book, my own kind of lifestyle guide pyramid, food pyramid, etc., fitness pyramid, to prioritize some things to help create some shortcuts for people.
Mm-hmm. It's really awesome. I guess, well, let's start with food. So I really liked how you set up your meal programs, especially... I noticed they serve it as such a good base. You joke about how you like bland food, and I really appreciate that, because I too like bland food. But I mean, obviously they can be spiced up for other people. But you included various meal programs, including those for people who are on a raw food diet or maybe have certain allergies. Would you be able to talk about how these meal plans that you've included for bodybuilding and fitness would differ from what like your typical vegan might be normally consuming?
Yeah, for starters, I've got about double or triple the amount of calories in there. And that's the thing I criticize my own book the most about, and probably the thing the book is criticized the most about, is that these are really high-calorie programs, and they came about because of a number of different things. One, it was essentially what I was really doing, and that's what eating 5,000 calories a day is what helped me go from 120 pounds to 195 pounds. It was eating a lot of food that helped me, and that combined with the weight training helped me build a lot of muscle and achieve the personal and professional goals that I was aiming towards and working really hard towards. But I realized along the way, and I realized this while I was writing it, but I didn't change it necessarily at the time. I realized these calorie quantities might be too much for a lot of people to appreciate. And I tried to write about that, a little bit of a disclaimer in there, talking about when you're actually exercising two or three times a day, you know, you're burning through thousands of calories. And in order to gain muscle, just mathematically, scientifically, the way it works, I mean, you're going to have to consume a certain number of calories versus what you're expending in order to create a net gain of muscle growth and weight gain. And I guess I somewhat naively assumed that was everyone's objective, because that was my personal journey. My objective was gaining a bunch of weight and muscle. And then when I was on tour, I remember I was at Rip Esselstyn's house in Austin, Texas. He set up a talk for me at Whole Foods Market World headquarters, and actually at his house, and I think one other one too, perhaps. He's an awesome guy. And it was one of my very first talks on tour, and someone said, well, what if those aren't your goals? What if you just want to tone up or just, you know, lose weight or whatever? And I did address that a little bit in the book, but by and large, the meal programs were aimed at building muscle. And perhaps the calories were a little too high, and there are too many processed foods in there, even for my liking right now. But really quickly, another reason why I did that, I did it specifically because I've grown up in the mainstream bodybuilding culture. Like I said, I met Arnold Schwarzenegger and pretty much everybody else in the entire fitness movement, because I used to go to all these events, and I spent 10 years in that lifestyle. And what I wanted to do was reach a lot of these guys, these big steroid, meat-eating, 10 times a day, you know, eat whole chickens at a time kind of people. I wanted to say, hey, listen, guys, you guys who eat 5, 6, 7, 8,000 calories on a daily basis, here's a plan to do that without eating any animals at all. So that was really part of my objective, was to, I knew people who were vegan were going to enjoy the book, because that was just kind of a given. People were at least they'd be interested in it, and hopefully they would enjoy it if I wrote it well enough, and hopefully most people have enjoyed it. But what I really wanted to do was also reach out to people who are in the mainstream bodybuilding and fitness culture, who are, honestly, if we're honest, they're the greatest violators of all consumers when it comes to animal product consumption. I mean, they're eating more food, more calories, more animal products than anybody else on a per person basis, on a per capita basis, even more than NFL football players. I mean, bodybuilders are obsessed with food. So I thought, if I can write a book that presents meal programs that these guys, these men and women, are familiar with, the caloric intake, the eating 6 meals a day or 8 meals a day, the amount of protein, then we can create a really nice cultural shift there. And I was actually very pleased when the book first came out. Iron Man magazine, very popular muscle magazine, it's been around for decades. I don't even know how they got a copy of the book. They just maybe picked it up at a store or found it online. But I just was informed one day through an email that someone liked the write-up in the magazine. I didn't even know they did a write-up. But I went to the store, went to the grocery store, picked it up, and this mainstream bodybuilding and fitness magazine wrote a glowing review about the book, because they really appreciated that aspect. They appreciated that it was basically a vegan version of what the whole culture of bodybuilding is doing. And so a lot of people resonate with that outside of veganism, and a lot of people in the vegan and health movements are maybe actually a little bit turned off, because they're like, wow, how am I supposed to eat 5,000 calories a day? And my answer is, you're not really supposed to. These are just guidelines based on my experience, and I tried to emphasize that these are just ideas, really. These are just ideas. And I created 50 of them, 50, like you said, raw food, common allergen free, high protein, maintenance, fat burning, you name it. I tried to make it appeal to everyone, but I know if I were to rewrite it, and I think I am, I would change some of those, especially to more whole food meal programs without the processed foods and lower calories, and focus on just holistic nutrition, and figure maybe I'll use my website and articles in magazines as a means to reach that mainstream muscle building culture.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if maybe we could expand more about what you were just talking about the, you know, you mentioned, you know, bodybuilders who will eat whole chickens a day and whatnot. And I think one sort of critique of the whole culture, and one reason that maybe vegans might be sort of wary to really get into stuff like this, is that, you know, their peers are often part of a very masculinist culture that values meat above all else, and it may be kind of alienating. I know how tough it is to talk to friends and family about it, but let alone someone who consumes buckets of whey protein a day, right? What sort of, I guess, what advice do you have, and what can you tell our audience about being able to be that vegan in such a meat-dominant industry?
Well, first of all, you have to be open to criticism and have pretty thick skin, or at least act like you do or pretend like you do, and not let things bother you. I mean, when I started doing this in the bodybuilding arena 10 years ago as a vegan, I sure got criticized quite a bit. And I had to carry a lot of that weight on my shoulders and a lot of stress on my shoulders. And I think a lot of us do who claim to be part of any kind of movement. Doesn't matter what you are. I mean, you claim to be part of a certain religious group or a belief system, then you better be prepared to be confronted about it and questioned and be in debates and conversations. And, you know, if you're not comfortable doing that, then, you know, that's just a byproduct of standing up for something. And that's just throughout history. You take a stand on something, be ready to be able to talk about it, answer questions, and address people. And so in this bodybuilding culture, I am surrounded by people who buy liquid egg whites by a gallon at a time, who enthusiastically promote ordering half a cow at a time and put it in their freezer, who enthusiastically share all of their meatloaf recipes and shopping at Costco and buying loads of fish and eating whole chickens at a time. And I have to be able to kind of gather myself, as this is quite offensive to me. This behavior is offensive, and especially taken so lightly, as if it's a funny thing or an entertaining thing or a joking, haha, look how many chickens I ate today. I have to be able to maintain my own composure and have an intelligent conversation with people about maybe the adverse effects of their decisions, or get the root cause of what compelled them to want to live that lifestyle anyway. As far as who says we need to eat 400 grams of protein a day or 600 grams of protein a day. I mean, these are absurd and obscene statistics when you look at the health implications, especially when they're coming from acid-forming, saturated fat-rich, calorically dense, cholesterol-ridden animal foods. And so I think, again, what you have to do is enter a conversation like this. I was up in Canada. I was in Toronto. I was on tour. And somebody came up to me. I was working at a festival, giving a talk at the Toronto Vegetarian Festival. And he kind of somewhat arrogantly came up to me and said, "So, I hear you're the guy who's going to tell me that whey protein is bad for me." You know, kind of that smirk on his face. And I said, "No, actually, you know, science is going to tell you that. Science is going to tell you that statistically it's harmful to your health. And here are the reasons why. You know, it's a byproduct. It's a cheap byproduct of the dairy industry, which is considered to be the most carcinogenic substance we can possibly put in our body in the form of food, if you want to call it that." We've got quotes around the word food there. a derivative from dairy industry, milk coming from another species. And I said, it's one of the foods that's most commonly linked to diseases of all foods, period. The most commonly linked to bone issues, to asthma, to allergies, to clogging of all kinds of aspects of the body, creating phlegm, creating reactions in people, acne, tumor growth, cancer growth. There's all of these reasons to stay away from this food. And so I think at the end of the day, we have to be able to have that conversation and not just get into a debate of ethics or morals, which then can just be a debate all day long about, like, what's better, Catholic or Buddhist. I mean, we just can go all day back and forth on that type of topic. And so what I think we can do is pull in some science, pull in some facts, pull in some statistics. And actually, one thing I really like to let people know is that I'm really concerned for you. I mean, I was in a conversation the other day. I was minding my own business, of course, and sitting out by a pool, actually, and someone introduced me as vegan, as if it was like I'm something special. And so she said, "Hey, this guy Robert, he's a vegan guy." And their first response was, "Oh, I'm sorry, haven't you ever tried bacon before?" and all the things that I'm missing out on. And then had the audacity to say, "Cows produce milk for us to drink." And that's when I had to go into a little bit of a conversation. Normally, I let some of these things slide when they're just passing comments, okay, you know, whatever kind of approach. But when someone is just blatant disregard for facts and science and respect for what a pregnant mother who gives birth to a baby who has milk for the baby and claiming that that is designed for human consumption. I mean, it's just absurd. So, so anyway, I was able to engage in that conversation, but in a not too confrontational or aggressive way, but just, "Hey, listen, I write books on this subject. I'm actually really concerned for your health. If you're really consuming that much bacon and dairy, let me give you a little bit of background on these foods. And, you know, I'm sure we'd all like to live healthy, disease-free, if we can, and have a nice, active, long life." And so I think we do engage in these types of conversations by setting aside some of our own initial reactions to just argue, but try to get to the root cause of, why is this person such a big fan of bacon in the first place? And why is this person so convinced that milk is good for them? And how can we address some of those issues? And we have to do that in the bodybuilding culture. And hopefully, you know, one athlete at a time or a bunch of athletes at a time in the form of books or magazine articles, we can start to have that conversation and we'll see a shift.
Awesome. So I guess moving on from food to exercise, one question I sort of had when I was reading the book, I was familiar with most of the exercises and stuff, but I was wondering if there's any differences in either the exercises or the training programs that are particularly better suited to vegans versus meat eaters, or is it basically the same? Are there, you know, certain areas that vegans might need to focus on more?
Yeah, they're basically the same. And I've had that question occasionally. It pops up in email or even in just conversation. Someone hears vegan bodybuilding. Well, isn't weightlifting all the same? Or isn't fitness the same for everybody? And yeah, for the most part, it is. And so the book primarily focuses on the nutrition aspect, the food aspect, the meals and supplements and meal planning and different diversity of foods and lists and all that kind of stuff. But the fact is, there are a lot of people who are vegan reading that book who are brand new to fitness. And that's where I wanted to list my favorite exercises, what I consider to be the best exercises, so you get the highest return on investment, the greatest return on investment by doing these top 12 exercises or so. And then I wanted to create some exercise programs for people. So here's day one, do this, day two, do this, day three, day four, day five, day six, day seven, because a lot of people really like that direction, that how-to gives them a list of things to do and they'll go do it. And then over time, they'll see the results. So the only difference I would say is that a lot of people, I think a lot of it is just anecdotal evidence at this point, although hopefully some studies are being done. But I think the most common reaction is that people who follow a plant-based vegan diet tend to have higher levels of energy due to the nature of consuming whole food-rich carbohydrates and sugars, and just naturally, that's just the way the body works. You have an abundance of energy, and that people who follow a plant-based vegan diet and lifestyle tend to have faster recovery from exercise, and that is primarily because the original sources of nutrition, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fatty acids, glucose, etc., come in their original forms from plant-based whole foods. And so when you're eating plants, you're getting the best antioxidants, the best amino acids for muscle repair, the best essential fats for joint strength and joint repair, the highest amount of usable energy from quality carbohydrates, and in general, those seem to be the two popular exceptions, I guess, where there's a difference between animal foods and plant foods, and the exercise component is that you have a little bit more energy and a little faster recovery when you don't eat animal products.
Okay, cool. Now, I was wondering, as a university student, I am not the richest person out there. And of course, when it comes to lifting weights, that usually involves a gym membership. When it comes to food, there's a lot more calories you need to consume. I was wondering if you had any advice or alternatives for individuals that are definitely interested in pursuing stuff like fitness and bodybuilding, but are maybe on more of a budget.
Yeah, absolutely. And I write articles about this. There's a few of them on veganbodybuilding.com right now. In fact, one I wrote when I was a student in my early 20s, because that was a big part of my life right at that time, was trying to figure out, how do I do this? I mean, how do I fund this endeavor to become a vegan bodybuilder? And so here's a number of different tips. There's so many things that we can do. We can buy bulk foods and plan ahead. I mean, just recently I was at the store, bought a bunch of potatoes, yams, sweet potatoes, rice, beans. These are very cheap foods. Buy them in bulk, spend a little bit extra time. Like I said, we all have 1,440 minutes in a day. We just have to manage our time wisely by maybe getting off of Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and spending an hour to prepare food instead, and then get back to those websites or whatever the case is. Turn the TV off, or better yet, not have one, and get news online. But part of it is managing time, because, and that has to be part of this conversation, manage time, because the biggest problem leading into overspending is because we feel like we're in a hurry. We're out of time, and I just got to get some calories. I'm super hungry. I got to eat. I just got to go to a restaurant. I've got to go, getting vegan fast food to go or whatever. And this doesn't have to be that way. So we can buy food in bulk, buy the foods that are very cost effective, the salads and fruits and vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds, really all plant, whole plant foods. The only time it starts getting spendy is when we start getting a little bit too fancy. And it's okay to be fancy and have vegan cream cheese and vegan pre-made burritos and all this kind of stuff, but just know that you're going to spend about five times as much as if you just bought the actual raw materials and just spent some time. And like you, I eat pretty basically, like I said in my book, and partly that's because I don't need to write a lot of fancy recipes. There's hundreds of vegan cookbooks that do that from people who actually have a background in that. I have a background in eating food, not making it. And so I eat food that I like, potatoes and lentils and beans and greens and tofu and lots of fruits and, almond butter, peanut butter, whatever. I eat all these different types of foods. I eat Indian food, Thai food, Japanese food, Ethiopian food, Mexican food, and plenty of other types of ethnic food. And so that's a great way. And also, I write that whole chapter about how to market yourself and be ambitious and get all these different things, these extra things. It's very easy if not everyone uses supplements, but there's plenty of supplements like Vega and Health Force Nutritionals and Sun Warrior and all these brands out there, Planet Fusion. There's a million of them that are all vegan. And it is so easy. It's the easiest thing in the world to get samples of those for free from companies. And I write about how to do that in the book, and how to contact companies, and how to, especially in the world of Facebook and Twitter, it's unbelievably easy. I mean, I right before this radio interview, I was at the post office shipping out free stuff to people because people contacted me and said, hey, I'm on a tight budget or whatever, or what suggestions do you have? And I actually work for Vega, and so I have usually plenty of Vega lying around, and as long as I don't spend too much money personally shipping it out, I'm happy to introduce Vega products to people who have never tried them. In fact, it's kind of silly. I'll probably criticize for this, for the cheesiness of it. But even Justin Bieber's uncle wrote me today about Vega stuff, and I told him I'd hook him up with some stuff. So he's a vegan guy, lives up in Canada, and we've been in touch for a little while. And anyway, I told him I'd send him some Vega. So send him, free stuff to the Biebs. So again, I'll probably criticize for that in this interview, but pop culture. But anyway, those are just some general suggestions. I mean, there's so many companies to contact to try their products for free and then write a little bit of a review about it online, give a shout out on Facebook and Twitter, and then just look at other resources out there. Look at websites. Look at the book Eat Vegan on $4 a Day by Ellen Jaffe Jones. There's plenty of resources out there to save money and still eat a very healthy vegan diet.
Cool. We're getting close to out of time, but I want to try to squeeze a couple more questions in there before we have to go. One section you have in your book is about turning your passion into a career. I really like how you included that. And I think much of our audience, of course, they really care about animal rights, but are probably working in different sectors, because, I mean, there's only so many things you can do, right? But I was just wondering, what advice would you have for them who, you know, definitely want to turn their passion into maybe a career, or maybe like at least a bigger part of their life, whether it's veganism, animal rights, or fitness?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be concise here. I mean, I like to just use expression, just work your face off. I got that from Gary Vaynerchuk, who turned his passion into career. And I kind of followed that model. I'm a huge fan of just working really, really hard at something, because if you care about it a lot, you put in a ton of time. It doesn't feel like work. It feels like pleasure. It feels like accomplishment. It feels like making a difference. It just feels energetic and exciting. And you have to find what you love to do and what you're passionate about and go for it and put everything you've got into it. Find what you're passionate about, embrace it with enthusiasm, and dedicate a lot of time to it. I keep hammering on this point that we have all this time, over 1,400 minutes per day. Why are we spending a lot of time doing things we don't want to do? Time is way too precious. Life is way too precious to be doing that. We need to find things that are productive, that help us progress and take steps forward. So find whatever it is, whatever aspect of the vegan lifestyle, animal rights movement, community that really tugs at your heart, and invest yourself into it and connect with the people that can help make that a career. And that those are people who run the websites, run the companies, run the organizations. I mean, save up a little money and go to one of these conferences and meet people in person. I'm actually someone who got my car and drove from Oregon to Canada, knocked on my boss's door and said, hey, I want a different role in the company. These are the five things I want to do. I want to do this, 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 this. And by the way, I want to get paid more and travel. And he said yes to everything because I had the foresight to go and do that. To make that happen, I wasn't willing to just settle for something I was only somewhat content with. I wanted something that was ideal for me, and I proved how it could help me and the company I worked for. And sure enough, I'm still doing that 7 years later, sending stuff to Beaver. So, you know.
I guess my final question is, well, it's kind of two questions in one. I was just wondering, where can our listeners go for more information about yourself or anything with the topic? And then finally, taking a page out of your book, is there anything else you would like to talk about that wasn't covered today?
Thank you for having me, Dan. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Animal Voices, and all the great work you're doing, first and foremost. I know sometimes I ramble and on some stories, but I appreciate the time today having me on. And veganbodybuilding.com is the site that I run. And I have a couple other sites and plenty of Facebook pages, including veganbodybuilding.com on Facebook, where it's quite active. You know, please join us there. Drop by, say hi, at Robert Cheek with an E on the end on Twitter. You know, and check out Plant Built, this competition coming up in Texas with a whole bunch of vegan athletes, to many other groups and organizations to connect with. And, you know, anything else that I'd like to throw in there? Really, just if you want to support the book, I'm actually working on a new book right now. And the more support I get for the first book, the more people order it from Amazon and write reviews on Amazon, the easier it is to pitch my next book to a publisher. And I hope the next book is just even bigger and better and has a bigger influence. So, you know, that actually really means a lot. It's hard to communicate that as an author, how much the support from the consumers and the audience really is. I mean, most books written never sell more than 5,000 copies, and we've sold way more than that, more than double that since the book's been out. And, you know, it speaks volumes to the audience and the support that all of you have given me. So I appreciate that. And like I said, drop by on one of our sites anytime. We have a whole team to answer questions for you, and we hope that you are able to follow your passion and make it happen. So thanks again, Dan. I really appreciate the opportunity today.
No problem. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right.
Animal Voices is produced and broadcast in St. Catharines at CFBU 103.7 FM and Toronto at CIUT 89.5 FM. Thank you very much to our team, Aaron O'Sullivan, Neil Harvey, Taylor Book, Lauren Corman, and Kevin Tillman. If you want to contact us, you can go to animalvoices@gmail.com or find us on our Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr pages. Thanks again to Robert Cheek for coming on today. I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for listening.